Hello, you are listening to KVNF, Mountain Grown Community Radio, and Local Motion, our weekly local affairs show. For KVNF News, my name is Eric Gould. On this Local Motion, we'll talk about marijuana enforcement and marijuana revenue. Voters in Colorado and Washington made recreational marijuana legal for the first time in 2012. Since then, there have been countless regulations and laws developed to define a regulatory framework, taxation rates, and enforcement procedures in Colorado. Within the last year, local counties and municipalities have streamlined their ordinances to more accurately mirror state law. In a move to help stamp out the black market, local law enforcement agencies are using the new ordinances to support their efforts to cut down on illegal grow operations. In Delta County, where voters rejected the sale of recreational marijuana, there has been a noticeable increase in the number of compliance checks on residential marijuana grows, both within city limits and in the county. Local police and county sheriffs are actively seeking out illegal grows and are issuing fines for those who are not compliant with the new ordinance. KVNF News spoke with local police and county sheriff's officials to get an update on the situation. First, here's our interview with Paonia Police Chief Neil Ferguson. He started out by saying that from his perspective, the compliance checks have become standard operating procedure.
We've been doing about the same as usual. Things are going really well. People are being very compliant with the ordinance that has been set out. So things are going really well.
When this new ordinance came out, it was to make it more in compliance with state law. Was it intended at that time that there would be more enforcement?
There was planning on being the same enforcement throughout town. Just gives us something to be able to fall back on as an ordinance rather than a state statute.
Okay, and then walk me through a compliance check. You don't have to have a warrant, is that correct?
Correct. If we can see marijuana growing and articulate that it is marijuana growing, that can constitute plain view. At that point, we can go and knock on the door, talk to the owners, get permission to go and look, and just make sure that everything is in compliance.
And let's talk a little bit about what you need to be compliant. The plants have to be enclosed and in a lockable enclosure, is that right?
Correct. An enclosure is four sides and a roof. It has to have a lockable door to where you are able to lock it and keep other people out of it, as well as anybody that's going through or anything. So, yeah, as long as it's enclosed and locked and out of the view of public, then that's what we're looking for.
And what is the difference between medicinal and marijuana at this, or medicinal and recreational? At this point with this new ordinance, there is no difference. Is that right?
That is correct. You are allowed to have 12 plants per residence, regardless if it's medical or medicinal, or medical or recreational, I'm sorry.
And what about if there's one residence but three people live there? Does that change it?
No, it does not. Per residence is just the exact residence of the place, and it's only 12 plants per. That was one of the big changes that came across the state. In previous years, you were allowed to have 6 plants per 21 and over in the residence. Now they changed that to 12 plants per residence.
And what about the distinction between indoor and outdoor? Is there one?
Yes. If you're growing indoors, your locked door is considered locked and enclosed. If you have children in the residence, then it needs to be in a totally different set of room away from the children and needs to be locked so that way they can't get in there.
How does the grant situation work? You can get reimbursed for these compliance checks through grant money. Is that correct?
I believe so. There is a couple of grants out there that they had started, I believe, last year. For funding for marijuana checks and compliance, and also anything that you spend, say, doing ordinances or passing any kind of things like that. I do not know exactly how it works. I'm looking into that as we speak.
And then with the Paonia Town boundaries, the way they're drawn, sometimes they're real confusing about what's in county and in town. If some of these grows actually, like, appear to be in town, but actually are in county property, that will be enforced by the sheriff. Is that right?
That is correct. We only enforce our town town limits. So if there's any question to it, then they can give us a call and we can definitely go and take a look and see whose jurisdiction it would be in.
And then just a couple of questions about your experience as chief of police here in Paonia. One of the things that was talked about a lot when they were considering legalization was that the argument that it would increase use for teenagers. In your experience as chief, have you seen that?
I've not seen any statistics or anything to prove that it has increased or decreased.
And then last question is also just kind of your experience as chief here in Paonia. Have you seen an increase in marijuana-related crimes?
We have more public smoking than we used to have, yes. People think that it's okay to smoke in the public, which it's not. That has gone up a little bit.
And how do you enforce that? Is that a fine?
Yes, generally it is. Most of the time we'll go up and we'll let them know that, you know, not allowed to do that. If it's something that we've happened or a person that's happened to do it more than once, then they would get a fine at that point.
You are listening to KVNF, Mountain Grown Community Radio, and Local Motion, our weekly local affairs show. In this Local Motion, we're talking about marijuana enforcement and revenue. So far, we've heard from Paonia Police Chief Neil Ferguson, who talked about the local compliance checks that police are performing at town residences. To summarize, the new statewide marijuana ordinance allows for 12 marijuana plants per residence, regardless of medicinal or recreational use. Police do not need a warrant to conduct a compliance check, and the first-time fine for non-compliance is $500. Marijuana plants must be in a lockable enclosure. The number of plants remains 12 per residence, regardless of how many people live there. If children are in the house, indoor operations must be in a separate lockable room away from the children's rooms. Next, here is KVNF's interview with Delta County Undersheriff Mark Taylor. Taylor will be the sheriff in Delta County after current sheriff Fred McKee's retirement, which is pending. He talked about what happens when sheriff's deputies respond to a complaint about a marijuana grow.
So normally the way we've been doing compliance checks is there is no shortage of individuals in the county that call and say that their neighbor has marijuana growing outside or somebody drives by and sees marijuana in somebody's backyard. So that's been our largest source of information as far as, you know, what door we go and knock on or check to make sure that the individuals are in compliance. As far as a warrant, you know, our deputies are instructed to knock on the door and seek permission to go and inspect the marijuana. And if they're in compliance, then everything's good. They thank them and leave. If they're out of compliance, they try to work with the homeowner to get them into compliance. If the homeowner doesn't want to cooperate with law enforcement and we have enough information, then yes, then we obtain a warrant and go back and start a criminal investigation.
So if the deputies ask for permission to search the house and the homeowner says no, then the deputies would go back at that point and then get a warrant?
Well, it's not necessarily the house. You know, if we have information that somebody's, you know, has a large-scale growing operation in a house, then we'll begin a criminal investigation at that point and get a warrant ahead of time. The compliance checks are mainly designed for the outside marijuana grows where either a neighbor sees it, plain view, or an officer, one of the deputies drives by and sees marijuana in the backyard or the front yard, you know, can see it plain view. They'll go and knock on the door and just ask if they can do a compliance check, and more times than not, the individuals that the deputies have contacted so far this year, they've been really cooperative, and we've had several that were out of compliance by a few plants, and the deputies worked with them to get them into compliance. We've had a couple of instances where the deputies have written summonses into court for people that were out of compliance and should have known better. But, that's kind of the process of it.
And if they do find that they're not in compliance, hypothetically, they're on that first time, it's just a warning, right? Or do they issue a fine?
State law and the county ordinance mirror each other, and in both the state law and the county ordinance, there is that opportunity for a basically a warrant. They still receive a summons into court, but it's a small petty offense for the first offense.
Is Delta County experiencing a lot of marijuana-related crime right now?
That's kind of ambiguous question, but we do experience crimes that are, in my opinion, related to marijuana. In the past, we've seen large-scale marijuana grows specifically designed for distribution of marijuana. We've seen butane extraction labs here in Delta County that are highly flammable and illegal. Delta County has seen criminal enterprises move specifically to Delta County to do nothing more but to grow marijuana and export marijuana to other states, you know, specifically just for financial gain. We've seen a lot of water thefts. We have some of these criminal enterprises and other individuals that buy up property in Delta County that don't have any water rights. They end up stealing water from legitimate farmers and ranchers. Marijuana takes a lot of water to grow, and so that's been an issue. Our thefts and burglaries are on the rise. I do seriously believe that drugs are a result of that. Not only marijuana, but all the illegal drugs that are used in the county. And the reason I say that is specifically marijuana is, you know, $200 to $300 an ounce. And if an individual doesn't have a job or has a low paying job, how's he gonna or she, you know, how's she gonna afford $200 or $300 an ounce a week or a month, or, you know, however often they need to buy an ounce of marijuana, you know, so they steal things to purchase that. And those are generalities, you know. There's certainly, I'm not talking about everybody that smokes marijuana. There's individuals out there that enjoy a marijuana cigarette just like an individual might enjoy a glass of wine or a glass of whiskey, you know. So those are just generalities of some of the crimes that we see for marijuana. We have seen a rise in minors in possession of marijuana, the use of marijuana. So we have several cases where minors have been in possession and using marijuana.
And then my last question has to do with funding. One of the benefits they say of legalizing marijuana is that a lot of the tax revenue can go back to the police departments. As sheriff, has that been your experience? Has Delta County sheriffs received any money from the state?
No. I think maybe what you're alluding to is the state does have a fund that's it's a grant, and it's for reimbursement purposes. So if an agency feels the need to request this grant money from the state, you need to be able to show documentations from the prior year of the marijuana investigations that you completed. So it's no money that that an agency really acquires other than a reimbursement, and the sheriff's office hasn't put in for any of those funds.
You are listening to KVNF, Mountain Grown Community Radio. I'm Eric Gould. Here on this edition of Local Motion, so far we've heard from Paonia Police Chief Neil Ferguson and Delta County Sheriff Mark Taylor. The two law officers spoke about the compliance checks on marijuana grows that have been going on around Delta County for much of the year. Now we'll take a step back and look at marijuana revenue. The numbers are staggering. Last year, the state of Colorado registered more than $1 billion in marijuana sales. Some $247 million of that revenue went back to the state in the form of taxes. Many questions arise when considering such large numbers. Who pays that tax revenue? Where does it go? What does the state use it for? Do companies pay their tax bill in cash, since retail marijuana is strictly a cash business? How do businesses conduct such large cash transactions when federal banking of marijuana money is still technically illegal? To answer some of these basic questions, KVNF News spoke with Mike Hartman, Executive Director of the Colorado Department of Revenue. Hartman was appointed to that position by Governor John Hickenlooper in July of 2017. Hartman spoke with KVNF News by telephone. Last year, marijuana sales in Colorado eclipsed $1 billion. According to the Department of Revenue website that I saw, tax revenue to the state in 2017 was over $247 million. And my first questions are, where does that $247 million come from? Who pays that?
Sure. So there's a complicated tax scheme associated with the marijuana industry, and it comes in a few different forms. The first is there's a 15% excise tax that is charged to the marijuana cultivators when they transfer the product from the cultivation to either the dispensary or to the marijuana-infused product manufacturer. And that accounts for a good amount of the tax revenue. In addition to that, we also have a 15% special sales tax rate on adult-use marijuana sales. So that's at the actual dispensary at the time that the marijuana is sold to the consumer. The consumer pays 15% of on top of the sales price. And then in the medical marijuana space, there's the standard 2.9% sales tax rate that happens throughout the state on all kinds of different products that's applied against medical marijuana. And when you add all three of those up, you get to the roughly $250 million in annual taxes that were collected in 2017.
Okay, so that's kind of where it comes from. And I guess my next question is, where does that money go? What budget does it go into, and who spends that money?
Sure. So of the approximate $250 million in 2017, it goes to a multitude of locations. The first is the Marijuana Tax Cash Fund, which is a fund that effectively goes into the general fund that the legislature gets to decide where those dollars are distributed, just like most other tax revenues that are collected in the state. And then beyond that, we send $16 million to local governments who have authorized the sale of retail marijuana in their jurisdictions. And in 2017, that accounted for over $16 million of the proceeds. And then after that, we have $90 million that goes towards school funding. So almost $50 million went to the public school fund, and $40 million goes to the Building Excellent Schools Today Fund, the BEST fund for public school capital construction.
And then I'm going to step back and look at banking and then come back to that taxation. So let's first go to the federal banking. Still, it is illegal to bank money at a federal bank, you know, and it's a cash business only. So it seems like kind of a simple question, but I just wonder, where does all that cash money go if it doesn't go into banks?
Yeah, so it's a misnomer, actually, that it's illegal at the federal level. At the same time that the Cole memo was issued by the Department of Justice, the FinCEN, which is the regulatory arm for the Financial Crimes Unit at the federal level, issued guidance to banks on how they can and cannot help provide services to the marijuana industry. And in effect, what you'll see is that banks with a national presence or a multi-state regional presence do not provide services to the industry because it could result in potential multi-state issues that happen at the federal level. However, any bank that is chartered in just one state could make the determination that they want to enter into the industry. And what we have found is that a good portion of the industry, not 100% of the industry, but a good portion of the industry takes advantage of that and utilizes cash treasury management services from the banking industry. Now, the marijuana operating companies, the companies that actually touch the plant, do not have access to loans. They don't have access to leases, things along those lines. But a good number of the licensees in the industry do have access to cash management services.
Okay, so in essence, basically local banks, even if they're insured by the FDIC, they can provide cash management services for marijuana.
There are many of them out there that are doing so, yes.
And that was kind of what I was going to go back to with the tax money with that $247 million. I wondered, how is it paid? Like, do some of these marijuana companies actually pay their tax bill in cash?
Yeah, so we don't get into the details of how we collect our tax proceeds. However, It has been widely publicized that some companies do have to pay it in cash because they haven't had access to services. But there's a good mix of how we receive those proceeds.
And then my follow-up question was about the Cole memo, thinking about that when you mentioned it earlier. That was what Attorney General Sessions, when he first took the job, was talking about rescinding. Is that correct?
That's correct. And he did rescind the Cole memo earlier this year and replaced it with a memo that's being called the Sessions memo. In effect, as we've had conversations with our federal regulators, it hasn't impacted the regulated marketplace here. What it has done is it's made it clear to the local U.S. attorneys that they have the jurisdiction in their own regions to allocate their resources associated with pursuing marijuana crimes and other crimes in accordance with how they see it as public threats. From the state regulatory perspective, we still view the Cole memo as the right regulatory framework, and we use that as our guidepost for how we think about our rules and regulations when we're putting them in place.
$1 billion is a lot of money. Who is making profit through the sale of marijuana? Is it corporations? Is it individual businesses? How does that work?
Yeah, so just like any other industry, you have corporations that are set up, and through their operations, they either make money or they don't make money, and they are the ones that ultimately make the profit and take the risk of operating those businesses. Now, the state benefits through the tax proceeds that we receive, and obviously we try to put those towards the best programs we can, particularly school funding and other educational resources to make sure that we're educating the public on the dangers of use of marijuana and trying to prevent youth from being enticed towards that space.
Do you have any idea, as an industry, how many jobs are provided by marijuana in Colorado?
So we don't have direct line of sight as to the exact number of people employed in the industry. However, the Marijuana Enforcement Division is responsible for licensing individuals who are eligible to participate in the industry. And our most recent numbers have just over 40,000 licensed individuals in the state who could potentially have employment in the industry. Now, we recognize that that doesn't mean there are 40,000 people that actively have jobs in the industry. It's a number lower than that. But there are 40,000 individuals in the state that are licensed to operate in the industry.
You're listening to Local Motion on KVNF. We're speaking with Mike Hartman, Executive Director of the Colorado Department of Revenue. So far, we've talked about how businesses are able to process all of the cash involved with the marijuana industry and how they're able to pay taxes. Now we'll hear about how this tax money is spent by the state. You mentioned the schools and the BEST program. That's the Building Excellent Schools Today program. That is a pool of money that's included with other tax revenue besides marijuana. Is that correct?
Yeah, that's correct. In fact, the BEST program is one of the beneficiaries of the Colorado Lottery as well. And that's one of the businesses that we're responsible here at the Department of Revenue.
And then what was the other aspect of tax revenue that goes to schools that you mentioned?
Fund received almost $50 million. So the difference between the two there, BEST is associated exclusively with capital construction, so either the construction of new schools or the renovation of existing schools. And the public school fund is able to fund things beyond just capital construction.
And both of those funds, the BEST and the public school fund, those are divvied out by competition, right? Schools have to apply for that?
Well, the BEST program, I know that to be the case. I'm not certain on the public school fund. I don't believe so. I think that's just money that's generally allocated in accordance with what the normal appropriation process is for the different school districts. But for the BEST program, yes, there is a grant program that is managed by the Department of Education's Office of Capital Construction. And they receive applications from local school jurisdictions seeking access to the BEST program. And my understanding is that about a third of the applicants receive funding each year. And typically those who do not receive funding from their application submit their application in future years, such that it takes a few years for a program to get funded on average.
If you have a school district like we have here in Delta County where the voters voted down recreational marijuana, they were opposed to it. Can those schools still be eligible to receive money?
They can receive money. And in fact, Delta County to date has received $19 million in BEST grants.
And then let's switch to law enforcement. And it's the same question. Can law enforcement agencies in Delta County receive money from marijuana tax?
So there are two different programs that local law enforcement can take advantage of. The first was a House bill that was passed last year that appropriated $6 million for a grant program where local law enforcement can come to the Department of Local Affairs and seek reimbursement for funds that they have expended in trying to stamp out the black market. It's important for the state to partner with local law enforcement agencies and making sure that funds are available to them to augment their activities was something that the legislature took very seriously. And as part of that, this year, the governor requested as part of his budget proposal and was ultimately approved by the legislature a $1.8 million appropriation to the Colorado Bureau of Investigation to create an interdiction force within CBI that local law enforcement can partner with to help eradicate black market activity in their communities.
What would stop the legislature, or what are the rules preventing, say, the government just saying for 1 year we're going to take all $250 million and put it to roads? Would they be able to do that?
The legislature has the ability to direct funds from the marijuana tax cash fund at their discretion entirely. I think it would take additional action on top of that to realign where some of the proceeds are identified, whether that's to the public school fund or to the BEST construction fund. But the legislature largely has within their discretion where they want to appropriate the funds from that we receive from the sale of marijuana.
When they first passed 64 in 2012 and then 2014 came along for actual implementing the whole legalization thing here in Colorado, people said the laws changed so much and there was never really any idea of what was coming down the pike and there was no real regularity. In your experience, have you seen that the system is kind of now evening out and you have a handle on how this is actually going to work practically?
Yeah, so we're very proud of the regulatory infrastructure we've put in place in the licensed marketplace. And certainly the legislature each year, there's a lot of lobbying that goes on to pass new bills that affect the marijuana industry. And when that happens, the Department of Revenue and other departments are responsible for putting rules and regulations in place to effectuate those laws. So you're going to, as you would see with any new industry that's coming into play, you're going to see a continued evolution of the landscape of regulations and laws associated therewith. But hopefully, as the industry continues to mature, we do see a level of stabilization such that the rules aren't changing on an annual basis and people have good line of sight as to what the rules that they have to comply with are.
Here on Local Motion, we've heard from Paonia Police Chief Neil Ferguson, Delta County Sheriff Mark Taylor, and the Colorado Department of Revenue Executive Director Mike Hartman. Thanks to all of the people who participated in the show. While county sheriffs and local police step up enforcement to try to curb the marijuana black market, legal marijuana in the state continues to generate millions of dollars in tax revenue as well as thousands of jobs. The experiment with legal marijuana that began in 2012 has created a well-defined, regulated market that shapes the very nature of the economy in Colorado. As more and more people move here, marijuana is sure to play a major role in the state's future. For KVNF News, I'm Eric Gould. Thanks so much for listening.